Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. Here in Canada, we love to complain about the banks. We complain about bank profits. They're too high. We complain about ATM fees, also too high. Bad customer service, too slow. Sales practices, too aggressive. All these things. And still, banks play an incredibly important role in the community for lots and lots of different reasons. In the United States, banks have played, in some areas and in some communities, a very different role throughout history and also in the present. There is a whole category of what are referred to as Black-owned banks. We're joined by Lynette Colfanny-Cox to talk about that idea. She is the money coach. She is the author of Bounce Back, The Ultimate Guide to Financial Resilience. And she joins us from Houston, Texas. Hello there.
Hi there, Bruce. Thank you so much for having me on. This is an important conversation.
It is. And I really appreciate you joining us to talk about it. I feel like our conversations toggle between past and present with great ease because you have such historical context on things that I'm sure many Americans aren't aware of, but certainly as Canadians, we're just not engaged with the history of how things have unfolded for Black Americans over a course of hundreds of years. So I first want to ask you to tell us about the history of Black-owned banks. Why did they start? Where did they begin?
Well, you know, we all kind of know about at least a little bit about the legacy of slavery in America, right? Where African Americans were subject to chattel slavery for, you know, roughly 250 years. And it wasn't until the end of the Civil War, which was in 1865, remember 1861, 1865 was the Civil War. And then there was the creation of the first Black-owned bank, Freedmen's Bank. Lincoln started that, Congress got together and agreed. And essentially it was a way to just sort of, you know, start things off financially for Black people who had been, of course, very much disenfranchised and would remain so really for, you know, a good 150 years, even after that. Some people say to this day, to a certain extent, we can get a little bit into that. But the idea was that because Black people were not allowed to have ownership or assets or things, it was like, well, of course they don't need banks or bank accounts and financial products or services. So the Freedmen's Bank was the first sort of entree into the banking world for Black people in America.
It has not been an easy history for some of these Black-owned banks. I understand the first or one of the first failed. It was led by white managers. It was not, hold it to the highest standards of business practices that you would today.
Yes, that is correct. And that is the bank that we're talking about, Freedmen's Bank. So ultimately, the bank did fail. And there was, I mean, when I tell you that we in the African-American community sometimes say that Black people have a long memory, especially for historical events that have happened, but where the history has been passed along and handed down. You might have heard your grandmother or your great grandmother talk about something. So we went through this era, of course, of not having sort of any more legalized discrimination or exclusion to this period, you know, post-Civil War Reconstruction era, where there was still a lot of efforts made to disenfranchise and to hold back African Americans economically. So you mentioned that, yes, the board, that white board, even though it was supposed to be, again, for the interests of and kind of in care of Black people, white, essentially, executives made a whole bunch of bad decisions, and the bank failed and went under. And so many Black people lost everything in that bank at the time. Now, again, we're going back, you know, over a century, but I don't have to take you back, you know, too far to really think about the ways in which we all, no matter our background or ethnicity, have heard stories of things that went right in a family or things that went wrong, right? So my mom is 80 years old. My mom was born in 1943. And she remembers a lot from her father, who was in Tennessee and who basically had to escape, you know, to the North to not have to deal with racism and the threat of violence being put upon him. So his personal, his banking and his financial experiences were very much rooted in this country's you know, sort of this concept that Black people would not be on equal footing, not socially, not economically, not politically, and certainly not financially as well.
We have covered on this show racism within Canadian financial institutions. I'm sure it's in lots of different places that remain hidden from view, but there are also some very prominent examples of people of color receiving service that would, you know, shock the white majority. They wouldn't understand how they could be treated so poorly. Tell us a bit about Black-owned banks in today's context. What role do they play?
Well, we do have a couple dozen Black-owned banks that still exist today, but unfortunately the numbers have dwindled dramatically. And it's for a whole host of reasons. Disinvestment in various communities, a lack of support at many levels, and then, frankly, an inability to be able to sort of get things going in a way that would generate deposits or confidence in some cases. So we do have some national banks in terms of them operating at scale. But for the most part, many are CDFIs, community depository financial institutions. They serve more regional or local members of the community. But there are, again, a couple that are sort of national in scope, City First, One United, et cetera, have national customer base. And they do a great job, I think, of offering not only access to products and services, checking accounts, savings, mortgages, loans, things of that nature, but they're also filling the gap in a lot of ways because these minority serving institutions, these minority depository institutions, as well as their credit union brethren, I should mention, because there are also Black-owned credit unions, right. They really do fill a need in communities that are marginalized, that are underserved, and that are historically low to moderate income.
I'm glad you mentioned credit unions because we have a very strong credit union sector here in Canada. Many were grounded in a particular demographic, like, you know, Dutch immigrants or people who belong to this particular union, and they have an expertise and an affinity for that demographic that really informs client service and the product offering. And in fact, at the source of a lot of innovations in the Canadian sector because they were able to target a need. When you look ahead, what do you see is the future of the Black-owned banks in America?
Well, I would hope that they would gain in prominence, viability, and strength. We know that compared to majority institutions, whether that's you know, a B of A, a Chase, a Citi, the asset base is very tiny, dare I say minuscule by comparison. I think, as a matter of fact, at Citi First, which is now the largest Black-owned bank in America, they merged in 2021 with Broadway Federal. They're now the largest, and they have assets of over $1 billion. But you look at, you know, Chase or, again, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, take your pick. And we're talking about many, many, many hundreds of billions or trillions in terms of, you know, kind of asset base and depository structure that's underpinning them. So I would hope, though, that we would see more support. And there is the National Black Bank Foundation, which is an organization that does provide operational and expert legal and organizational support to Black-owned banks. But it's also going to be incumbent upon institutions and individuals to make these banks stay alive and to be able to serve their purpose. And I should mention, Bruce, that sometimes people hear the phrase and the term Black-owned bank and they think, oh, okay, well, that's only a bank for Black people. No, that's not the case, actually. So when we say Black-owned bank, what that really refers to is an institution, a for-profit institution in the banking world that has members or customers or a board of directors that is predominantly Black. In many cases, though, they might also have the customer base is predominantly Black, as in the for-profit institutions or the not-for-profit Black-owned credit unions. But we certainly have many allies and, again, non-Black people, institutions can and do provide support to Black-owned financial institutions. For example, Netflix put a sizable amount of funds on deposit, the company Netflix, with Black-owned institutions. Last year, the NFL, the National Football League, borrowed about 78 million or so from Black-owned banks. Again, these were gestures of support and ways to do business with these Black-owned firms and to kind of, by example, illustrate that and hope that other institutions would also come to the table and do likewise.
One last question before we go. As you say, market share wise, the Black-owned banks are small compared to the massive institutions. I think it is fair to say that there exists a legacy of systemic racism globally, not just in America. If there was one or two things that you would put out to the universe to say would really make a difference on eradicating systemic racism as it relates to financial institutions, what would be one or two things that you would ask the universe to provide?
Ooh, that's a weighty and a good question. I guess what I would start with is a truth sort of commission. You know, I don't think that we can adequately move forward with the so-called original sin in America, the racism problem that was rooted in slavery, until there is an acknowledgement of what took place. And unfortunately, we're seeing a backlash right now in America. It's the exact opposite. There is a clamping down on DEI and diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. There are efforts to not teach the history in schools. And as a result, not only can we not even have an honest conversation about what took place and the ways in which it still has widespread ramifications today, then we can't get to part two, since you asked me about what were the two things I would say. The second thing is reparations is a redress. You fix harm. You know, if you bang up somebody's car, you would get out of the vehicle and say, "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry," and pull out your insurance card. And then if you were in the wrong, your insurance company would pay to fix that other person's vehicle. You don't just get to say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I hit your car," and then just drive off and walk away. It's an incomplete, part of the situation if you only acknowledge, "Oopsie, I did hit your car." Yeah. And so a lot of African Americans, myself included, feel like, one, there's not been yet the acknowledgement, the truth is not being told, let alone getting to that part of what do we do about this? How do we put this to bed once and for all?
Yeah. Very interesting, Lynette. I really appreciate your time and your wisdom on this topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce.
Lynette Colfani-Cox is the money coach and the author of Bounce Back, The Ultimate Guide to Financial Resilience. She was here to talk to us about Black-owned banks.